This is Ryan Archidak, and I shout out to the Bulls HQ podcast, all the way from Australia. We represent, and thanks for all the support.
Bulls fans, welcome to Bulls HQ, Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Podcasting Network. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the show, one that I am joined by the Bulls Gold Boys, Salim Sudawala and Edward Shuler. Boys, I am so happy you are here to join me today because there's no way I could be talking about this horrific loss to the Spurs by myself. My God, what did we just watch? We're literally just recording this straight after the game, but I'm still trying to process it all to the point where I'm not even mad. I'm like kind of amused and find this very, very funny to me at this point. But maybe as the hours wear on, I'll start to get a little bit more angry, or perhaps that'll even happen during this recording of this show. But I don't know how to feel about it, guys. But where are your minds at this point?
Yeah, for me, we were just talking about on our last show about the worst Bulls moments that we've experienced, and I mentioned the Sacramento Kings. Comeback from 2009, where they came back from the Kings came back from a 35 point deficit to win that game, and this brought back flashbacks. And I'm watching this game, and I fully expected the Bulls to win, but it felt like San Antonio just kept hanging in there. They just kept staying around like around 15, around 14, or like they just kept just hanging in there enough. And I mean, after a little while, you just see that they're within double or they're within single digits, and it just didn't seem like the Bulls really had much of an answer to the adjustments that Greg Popovich made. So, I mean, like you, I'm kind of at a loss for words and just kind of all over the place and just kind of stumbling for answers to what really happened. But it's disappointing to say the least, and I think this game in particular could have significant consequences in terms of what the Bulls decide to do at the trade deadline. So there's a lot that can happen, I think, with this game. It's not the proudest moment, and for a season where so much optimism has developed, and you know we feel a lot better about this team than we have in the past, this kind of brings you back to those low points that we had like last season or a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of what Edward said I completely agree with, and you're just looking at this game and a lot of the same issues that we've seen and we've openly complained about and worried about and wondered about, you kind of saw happen here again. And before we started recording, I was talking to you, Mark, saying like, this is probably like the third time I feel like a team has really done that, like that full court press where the young guys just have no answers for. They get very, you know, uncomfortable, disjointed, have ball movement stops, everything just stops. And obviously it doesn't help when Billy has some of these goofy lineups out there. He had that stretch where he had the old starting group out together that struggles. And then he brought in Otto, Otto has just been pretty much, you know, not good since he's come back.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like, you know, you're bringing in a player that is not really going to help us do anything. You probably should have brought in Thad at that point to try to – maybe Thad can come in and get these guys calmed down a little bit. But, yeah, it's just kind of the same old thing you see with this team all season. And I know we don't criticize Billy a lot this season, obviously, just because for the longest time we were in a honeymoon period because of the Jim Boylan era being, you know, tortured in that toxic environment with him. But you're kind of seeing some of the flaws that Billy has, too, as a coach, potentially. I mean, those are some of my thoughts, and I'm kind of, like, going all over. But, yeah, just my thoughts right now, that's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, I think that's all fair, and I don't want to say this loss is entirely on Billy Donovan, because I don't think that would be fair, because you know, even players like Zach LaVine and Thad Young, when pressed in that fourth quarter, were just making very questionable decisions. So, yeah, it's not entirely on Billy Donovan, but over the last week, and even beyond the last week, to be fair, the last few weeks, I kind of have been critical about his rotations. I was calling for a rotational change, starting lineup change, all that sort of stuff, and we obviously saw that happen earlier in the week against the Raptors. And you know, that bore out a good result, all being against a depleted Raptors team. They come back a few nights later, get another win, albeit, again, another depleted team, or a team that wasn't at a full strength, let's say. So, you know, were you going to put a lot of stock into that game? I'm not too sure. Whereas tonight, like, up 20-odd points against the Spurs, a Spurs team who is still, like, missing DeMar DeRozan, but at the same time still a very good Spurs team, or a competent Spurs team. And the Bulls were up 23 in this game, and they were looking very professional, looking very good, and I was thinking, you know, this should be another easy win. But the minute the adjustments came through, and this is where I kind of do put some blame on Billy Donovan, like, the Bulls didn't adjust at all to Greg Popovich's adjustments, which was essentially pressing the ball and pressing the hell out of the Bulls. And that was a really good adjustment by Pop, because the Bulls just don't have much playmaking all over the court, but more generally, particularly in the backcourt. So it kind of felt like in the midway through that third quarter, towards the back end of that third quarter to the start of that fourth quarter, where the team was essentially running out that second unit, which, you know, for a large chunk there, essentially just comprised of Wendell Carter, Kobe White, Ryan Arcidiacono, Otto Porter, as you mentioned, Salim, and then, you know, maybe Satoransky was in there for a bit, maybe Patrick Williams was in there for a bit, but I don't know how you can play this game, or you can see this game sort of start slipping away and leave those guys out there for an extended run. I also don't know how you can sort of come back in, you know, towards the back end of the game where things are getting tight, you've already lost the lead, and at that point, you take out Satoransky for Kobe White, a player who, you know, in the previous 12 minutes he was playing was very erratic and was making a lot of bad decisions. So, like, to me, this was a game where you had to just cull your rotation back to, you know, eight and a half guys. Like, Ryan Arcidiacono should not have been playing in the fourth quarter. Kobe White probably shouldn't come back into that game. You need to stagger the minutes of Thad Young and Zach LaVine a lot better to make sure that you have one of those guys on the court at all times if you can. And just that way you can avoid these lineups where you've essentially got entire bench units out there. And the Spurs are a really deep team to the point where their bench unit is actually pretty damn good. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't want to put this all on coaching, but Billy's rotational choices over the last week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks has been questionable in my mind, at least. I don't know if you agree with that, Edward, but again, maybe we're still in the honeymoon phase, but obviously he's better than Portland, but there's been some things that have worried me a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, I think the criticism about Billy Donovan is fair. At the same time, when you watch this team, consistently, it just feels like you're not getting much. You don't know what to expect out of his team on a night-to-night basis outside of Thad and Zach LaVine. And you look at you just look at the box score from today, and, you know, Lauri Markkanen plays 33 minutes, gives you 10.7 boards, and that just kind of shows you the downfall of his game, where if he's not making shots, what else is he giving you? But he played 33 minutes. So he was on the court for the majority of the game. And Tomas Satoransky, I mean, I like what Satoransky does as a passer, but, I mean, even then, he's not going to give you much scoring-wise. And then, I mean, Patrick Williams had a pretty solid game, I think, 10 points, 14 rebounds. But then outside of that, you just get so much mixed production that it's just not a guarantee from night to night. So it's not a surprise, because we knew what this team was coming into the season in terms of the flaws. And this season just kind of confirms those and makes it easier, I think, for the front office to make future moves. But it's just so hard to really find a solution for this team to really win consistently. I think making the change and moving Kobe White and Wendell Carter Jr. to the bench, I think that's a logical move. But I think, in a sense, it's almost like kind of kicking the can a little bit, because it's just Yeah. There's not really a whole lot you can do here. So it's unfortunate. But, yeah, like I said, I think the criticism of Donovan and his rotations, they're definitely warranted, I think.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I mean, this felt like a game where they very much missed Garrett Temple. Like, if Garrett Temple could have been taking those Archie Diakno or White or Denzel Valentine minutes. I mean, Valentine did even play in the second half. I can't remember him if he did. He was very bad in the first half, so that's probably why he didn't play. But yeah, I certainly take your point that he, you know, Donovan, that is limited by this team, and, you know, he probably only has a, you know, beyond Thad and Zach, he doesn't really have a consistent rotation or guys that he can maybe consistently count on every single night. And, you know, maybe you can put in Williams and Satoransky in that next tier, maybe Lowry too, but, you know, they'll have one good game, another bad game thereafter. But I don't know, Salim, like, in terms of this rotational change, this starting lineup change, well, like, what message does that send to you from Donovan, from AK, about this squad moving forward? I mean, I want to talk about the trade deadline coming up, given that we're essentially a week away, and maybe after this game it feels more relevant as to what they should or shouldn't be doing. But I mean, you couple this loss with those really bad losses to the Sixers and Heat, and I guess that's the issue. Like, that Sixers game should have been a win, this Spurs game should have been a win. And if it was, just like with basic execution, the Bulls are at 500 right now, but, you know, poor games has left them being, you know, sitting on the outside at the moment, still within a play-in reach. But I don't know, Salim, like, in terms of this rotational change, the fact that, you know, Edward touched on there, like, Lowry has been not so great the last few games, was bad today against the Spurs. We obviously know Wendell and Kobe have been benched. I mean, what does this say about this young core, if we want to even call it a young core? I'm not sure we can anymore, but how do we move forward with those guys going forward, given the issues with the rotation?
Yeah, you talk about Lowry, and you and Edward touched on his lack of production today because he just doesn't make his shots. But also on top of that, he's so dependent on the system and, you know, guys setting him up. When you see a defense is clamped down on the Bulls, you kind of see that ball movement stop, and then he can't really do anything for himself, so he becomes kind of just like a spectator out there. That right there, it shows you the flaws in Lowry, where, yeah, it's all rosy and great when he's, you know, hitting the open threes and Thad is finding him, you know, backdoor cut a little bit to the basket. But when the defense wants to take him out, this happened against the Knicks too. Remember when, before he got hurt, when we played the Knicks back to back, Tibbs knew what to expect the next game and just completely took Lowry out of the Bulls offense. So in that sense, when you talk about the trade deadline coming up, I've been one of the most vocal people, and I know you have as well, and Edward's kind of been on the same page overall, that the Bulls should look to move him. We look at the glaring holes on this team. It's need another veteran ball handler, or just somebody, doesn't have to be a veteran. We talk about Lonzo Ball, he's technically not a veteran, but I mean somebody that you can take up a little bit of the ball handling, do some playmaking. Obviously, you're also looking at maybe a wing. I don't know. Houston looks like they're wholesaling. Could you steal somebody from them? I don't know. But those are the glaring issues. And with Wendell and Kobe, it makes sense that they made that switch, because, again, they're just showing that they're trying to win. I think Wendell maybe just needed that little boost for himself to try to – I know he talked about he had some personal things he was working with, dealing with. He was really down on himself. I think that did help him a little bit to try to get that pressure off his back. Kobe, like you said, at times he's just unplayable, and he's the biggest issue as far as when you look at this team, it's concerns about playmaking and having a guy out there that can really, you know, take the reins of the offense. So yeah, I mean, when you look at all these issues, you have to hope that the Bulls can address something at the trade deadline to improve the holes that are there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, of the players that matter, let's say, so I'm not including Denzel Valentine, I'm not including Archie Diakono, because those guys don't really matter, and I would be very surprised if they're back next season. But based on the guys that matter, I mean, Kobe White right now is the worst player in the rotation. I know what his numbers are and all that sort of stuff. I understand that he gets a lot of opportunities, but, you know, the fact that he has those opportunities and struggles at times. Like, he's probably the worst player in the rotation right now, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But this was an interesting Lowry game in the sense as well. Like, I don't mind, like, his offense is fine. Like, I understand players will have bad offensive nights. We all know that Lowry's a player that takes the majority of his shots from three. I mean, he had 10 field goal attempts in this game. Six of those were from the three-point line, which is essentially his three-point rate in the season. Basically, 60% is what he averages from a field goal to a three-point ratio. So, you know, his offense is what his offense is. But I guess the concerning part for me was he was playing center tonight. He got absolutely owned by Jakob Poeltl. But like you mentioned, Salim, on offense, like, the Spurs were just running guards on him and taking him out, like, that way. And that's the way you can really stop Lowry Markkanen. Like, yes, he can get out there and get open and spot up for those three-point attempts when you're getting those mismatches on those bigger lumbering big men who can't necessarily get out to his three-point shot. But when you've got, like, Keldon Johnson and Derek White sort of switching on the coverage on Lowry Markkanen, and you're basically putting a 6'4", 6'5" guard or 6'6" forward on Lowry, and those guys can easily stay with him from a speed point of view, can get out to his jumper. Like, his offense just goes away entirely. So, yeah, this was a really interesting game from Lowry in the sense, like, all the flaws that we had or concerns that we have about a player like Lowry were very much evident on both sides of the ball, like how easy he is to take out on the offensive side. And then on defense, obviously, you just can't play him at center because he will get owned. So in that sense, like, I mean, the ideally, like, in my mind, I'm like, yeah, let's get rid of Lowry. Let's get rid of Kobe White. Let's get rid of these failed younger guys and let's bring in some veterans. But I mean, at the same time, we're trashing these guys and you're hoping you can maybe move them in a trade for some better players. But is it realistic to even move someone like Lowry or Kobe or even Wendell for a decent veteran that can shore up this roster and make it a little bit more competitive, let's say?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I wouldn't look to move necessarily Kobe or Wendell yet because they are still under contract. Maybe you can still develop them into being Kobe can still maybe be that bench scorer eventually if you get an actual starting point guard or just somebody starting that can initiate offense. But outside of that, like, yeah, I'm just looking at, like, Lowry for sure to see if you can move him because I still worry about the contract that he'll get in the offseason. And maybe there's something you can flip for Felicio in a second. I don't know. Those are the type of trades I'm thinking about.
Yeah, it's tough thinking of these. Like, Lonzo Ball has obviously been the most popular guy, but games like these definitely make you want to get another veteran somehow because you're just tired of relying on young players making so many mistakes. And it's not like young players are – it's not like you're just tossing, like, one young player into the game and – he's just making a mistake in veteran lineups. You're having all these guys making mistakes at the same time in the same lineups. Yeah. So that's really, really hard to do, even if you're trying to develop and evaluate, because Billy Donovan at this point is definitely making it clear that, hey, he wants to win some basketball games. So it would be nice to find some type of, like, a veteran who's kind of on the younger side. I don't know who that player is, but it would be nice to find someone like that who's affordable, who can maybe stick with the team next year and can help you play some lineups that, you know, prevent you from playing so many young guys. But overall, I really think that a game like this, not only does it reinforce the need for quality veterans, but it just reinforces, like, man, at one point we were really thinking that a core of these young players could really, like, be a force one day, and this just shows you, like, that was never really happening. Because if you're losing games like this, it's just like that was never a thing.
Yeah. I certainly feel that. I guess the name I've been thinking about lately, just based on his availability seemingly being a thing, is Aaron Gordon, who is still youngish, like you sort of mentioned there, Edward. I think he was, what, like 25, 26, similar age to Zach. a veteran at this point, clearly needs a change of scenery. Like, if there's a way you can package Lowry and Felicio, if you need to attach some sort of pick for it, I don't know. But, like, he's under contract on a reasonable contract, a very good contract even. Like, can we do something like that? That would be interesting to me. But, yeah, I certainly take your point. But, like, this is one of those games where I understand why those that are crying out to, you know, trade guys like that, Satoransky, Temple, Otto, whatever it might be, like, to really shore up your draft assets. Like, I understand, like, where that logic comes from after a game like this, but I almost doubled down on my opposite take, which is, you know, this is a game where I don't want to be adding or playing the draft game anymore and taking more chances on some young guys or young picks that may or may not eventuate based on what we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years, and especially with Levine's situation, the fact that he can be an unrestricted free agent after this season. Like, I don't, like, this, a loss like this almost makes me want to, like, double down on go for the veteran type thing. And that isn't to say for, you know, go for a 35-year-old, another 34-year-old here. Like, I'm not saying that the Bulls should go after, like, LaMarcus Aldridge or anything like that. But, like, can we get in some players that just know how to play basketball? And we're not necessarily relying on, you know, another draft pick in the hope that it can sort of, you know, get us out of this mess type thing. Because we've seen what can happen over the last 3 or 4 years, and I think it's far more likely that the Bulls draft, you know, another version of Lowry or Kobe or Wendell, not obviously not the same skill set, but, like, in terms of level of player versus, you know, finding some, you know, some option that really propels this team out of where they're sort of fixed at this point. So, again, I don't know what you guys think on this, but, like, it's these sorts of games almost make me think more about doubling down on trading and get rid of all these young guys and trying to get as many established guys in as you can as quick as you can.
Let's bring up a team like Miami, for instance. Like, Miami of last year that had young players like Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Bam Adebayo. I might be forgetting someone else. But then they also had these veterans, Jimmy Butler, Jay Crowder, Andre Iguodala. Again, I'm forgetting some players, but they just had a nice mix of veterans and young players, and the veterans created this safety net for these young players to succeed where they didn't have to roll out all of these youth movement lineups. They could put in three or four veterans with a young player and take the pressure off that young guy to succeed. Like, they weren't putting Tyler Hero in a lineup and saying, okay, Tyler Hero, go out and get me 25 and win this game. They're saying, yo, put Tyler Hero in this lineup where he can be the third or fourth option, and then he can just kill you that way. So I agree with you. I think that the Bulls do need to start, like, acquiring veterans and guys who can produce now. Like, this isn't really a situation where, granted, I would love to have Kay Cunningham, Jalen Suggs, or whoever from this draft, but that's probably not that realistic right now. No, so, I would like to have some veterans who can play and who can, you know, make Zach LaVine's life easier, who could make Patrick Williams' life easier. Like, we have plenty of young guys, I think. Granted, they're flawed, but I don't think we're in the stage anymore where we just need to be like, okay, let's just keep collecting young guys, keep giving them years to make mistakes, whatever, whatever, because right now we have a legitimate all-star in Zach LaVine who is just turned 26. So there's a nice window to compete with him, and I think you just need to find those players who you can do that with.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Heat, which is a very good example, but, I mean, even the opponent that we face tonight, like the Spurs, like, they've got the young set of guys. So you've got your Derek Whites. You've got, obviously, DeJounte Murray, Keldon Johnson. Who else am I forgetting from their team tonight? I mean, Devin Vassell played a bit. Lonnie Walker. Like, that's five youngish guys, or guys that, you know, have anywhere between sort of 1 to 5 years of NBA experience. Even Jakob Poeltl, if you want to throw him in there too. But then they sort of complement those guys with Patty Mills. DeMar DeRozan didn't play tonight, but he's obviously been a fixture of this team for the entire season. Rudy Gay, previously LaMarcus Aldridge, not necessarily much now, but, like, they sort of complemented those younger pieces that they were growing and fostering with some good veterans that obviously played in a very smart organization, and that sort of has helped these guys develop. Like, I don't know if Derek White, is Derek White, if he's drafted into a different organization, or Keldon Johnson, if he goes to somewhere where he's playing with, you know, three, four, five other young guys in rotations and you're expecting them to somehow click and understand how to play basketball, like, I kind of think that's forward thinking as well. But, I mean, we've already touched on it, but, like, this next week of basketball, it kind of feels dramatic in saying, like, it's going to shape the rest of the season, but it realistically can. I mean, they've got four more games before the trade deadline. We just got done with the Spurs game, but on Saturday, or Friday evening your time, Saturday afternoon my time, the Bulls are at the Nuggets. Then they've got Detroit on Sunday, followed by games against the Utah Jazz on Monday, and then the Cavs on Wednesday. That Cavs game is the last game prior to the trade deadline. We saw a few trades happen today, so the NBA teams are starting to already hitting the button on those trades. But, I mean, Salim, if the Bulls lose to the Nuggets, I'm assuming they're going to drop a game to the Jazz, but if they lose one of these games to the Pistons or Cavs, like, will there be any justifiable reasons for, you know, AK sitting on his hands here and doing nothing at the deadline, whether it's a blow-it-up approach or trying to add pieces to win now? Like, if they only win one of the next four, like, can he be justified at all if he does nothing at the deadline?
I mean, it depends. It always depends on what's available. And the biggest thing we've heard right now is a lot of teams aren't selling because of that play-in game. So that obstacle is there. That could make it maybe justifiable more so the wins and losses. I mean, what's actually more annoying to think about, though, is if you go into the next four games, you can technically, after Cavs, be in the same position that we are in right now. That's, I mean, it's kind of annoying if you think about it, because then you didn't really move forward, you didn't move backwards, you're just who you are. And then if you don't add anyone, it's like, okay, now what, are we just going to keep playing this back and forth game for the rest of the season? Which, I mean, might not happen, because I think the schedule does get harder. But, and to the earlier point about tanking and trying to sell off pieces or trying to not make the playoffs, we're just too far ahead in the standings as far as trying to really make up any ground to get enough lottery balls to really make a difference there. So you're hoping for luck no matter what, like a really lucky draw. So yeah, I mean, I had hoped that a team ends up kind of folding, saying, you know, like next Wednesday or Thursday morning, a team just like, you know what, we don't have any shot at getting the playoffs, playing even. I know the Bulls are calling us. Let's see if they're still interested. That's honestly, that's the only thing I'm hoping for right now.
Yeah, I certainly see that. But like, even like forecasting down the road, let me read you this schedule. These are the first nine games the Bulls have post the trade deadline. So at Spurs, at Warriors, at Phoenix, at Utah Jazz, then back home to play the Brooklyn Nets before going on another four-game road trip, at the Pacers, at the Hawks, at the Timberwolves, at the Grizzlies. So after the deadline, you've got probably five games in a row, which, you know, they're playoff teams essentially. I'm not expecting a good record there. Then you've got, you know, some more winnable games against some more relatively similar teams, but they're on the road, so who knows how they sort of go. But I don't know, like, we're talking about this four-game stretch here, maybe determining what they do at the deadline, but it might even be those nine or so games after the deadline as to what the Bulls could try to think about doing as well, or how they shape themselves at the deadline. But, look, you definitely make a good point that the Bulls' ability to do anything at the deadline is kind of, I mean, they can play their own part, they can make their own luck, but at the same time, if they want to be buyers, it's going to be tough, given that there's going to be a lot of teams trying to do the same thing, I would imagine. A lot of contending teams, like we saw the Bucks earlier today, pick up PJ Tucker. I'm sure there's going to be other teams like the Heat that may be interested in, like the LaMarcus Aldridge. What are the Lakers going to do? What are the Sixers going to do? Are the Nets going to find another player? But then you've got other fringe playoff teams, or, you know, those teams there are just under, like the Celtics. What are the Celtics going to do? Like, there's going to be a lot of buyers, a lot of teams that are going to try and sneak into that playoff point of view, where, unfortunately, like, I do understand why people see this team as a good selling option, and I just don't know what AK feels like. I mean, he made that comment around there being some delusional playoff teams, and he obviously wasn't necessarily inferring what the Bulls were or weren't, or how he sort of thought about that. But I don't know, are we being delusional in thinking that even adding one or two vets really changes the landscape of this team into something more? I don't know. It's weird. Fandom is fickle. I mean, I've been one of the king guys in terms of, or one of the leading voices, let's say, in terms of like, keep that, keep all the vets, all this sort of stuff. But it's games like this, games against the Sixers, game against the Heat, where you just start questioning your existence more holistically.
We're talking about like a guy like Temple making a big difference, and realistically, he would. Like, he would have helped today with the full court press. Another guy that can handle the ball that probably make better decisions than Kobe, at least. He's a better defender. He's not, obviously his shooting is a little streaky, but at least you can consider him a two-way guy. And Temple is more of what, like a 10th guy, not normally 10th guy on a, like a really good team.
Yeah.
So that. If that guy makes a difference, obviously if you're adding another decent piece, even like another Satoransky type of piece, who's probably like a seventh or eighth guy, that could make a difference too, just because you have another release valve when one of these other guys who are just like have not giving you absolutely anything you can put in the game.
Yeah, no, that's all fair as well. But I try not to be too emotive about these sorts of things. Like, I try to be as level-headed as I can be. But like I said, losses like this get at me sometimes. But, fellas, I don't want to keep you too much longer given this nonsense that we just witnessed. And maybe this nonsense that we're going to sort of ensue over the next week. I think it's going to be an interesting time to be a Bulls fan. I think the takes will be flying no matter what happens. I think it's going to be an interesting week or so, but I'll let you guys get away. Maybe we can find something more productive to do than be thinking or talking about this stupid basketball team at times, because they can be tough to deal with. But look, I appreciate you guys coming on and doing this little crossover pod with me. I wish we could have done it on better terms, let's say. I was looking forward to talking about a 3-game winning streak, but lo and behold, we couldn't have that. But tell the people where they can follow you online. I'm sure they already know if they're tuning into Bulls HQ. They know where to grab you guys on Twitter and Bulls Gold and all that sort of stuff. But in the event they do, tell them where they can.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can follow us at Bulls Gold on Twitter. You can catch us every Tuesday, 9, 8 Central on Nothing But Net Radio, which is on Dash Radio. And, me and Salim, we're always having a lot of really good guests. We're always having a lot of really good conversation, and we're agonizing about the same things you do. So, this Bulls team can make us lose our minds. But we've been fortunate this season because it's been more good than bad, at least, but even though these games are definitely going to stick out. But follow us on Twitter at Bulls Go. Check us out on Nothing But Net Radio. And it's been great to be here on Bulls HQ with you, Mark.
No problem. I'm happy to have you guys anytime. Like I said, I wish we could have been talking about a 3-game winning streak, maybe hyping ourselves to get this Nuggets game. Maybe if we got that one, we would have been close to 500, talking ourselves into that and all that sort of nonsense. But it is what it is. But yeah, let me say though, I really enjoyed I enjoy all your episodes, but I enjoyed the last one that you guys did where, you know, you had Guilty on, Vince on, D-Boy. That was fun to listen to. So that was a cool episode, and shout out to all those guys as well. But yeah, keep doing what you guys are doing. I'll be obviously tuning in, and Bulls HQ listeners, if for whatever reason you're not following Salim or Edward or Bulls Gold, then what the hell are you doing, folks? Go correct that as soon as you can. But that just about does it on this episode of Bulls HQ. Whilst you're out there following Salim, Edward, Bulls Gold, etc., you can hit me up on Twitter too, at MK Hoops. Follow Bulls HQ there too, at Bulls HQ Pod. If you want to come be part of the Bulls HQ Discord forum, or channel, or whatever the hell it's called, just send me a DM on Twitter at MKHoops. But like I said, that's about all for this episode of the show. If you don't want to talk about the Bulls anymore, because the Bulls are annoying, and hopefully next time we do, though, we're talking about some W's. But like I read off on that, like I read the schedule before, maybe that's not the case. But nonetheless, thank you for tuning in. We do appreciate it. Thanks again to Edward and Salim, and we'll be back on Bulls HQ very soon.